You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Blitz is defined as a sudden, savage attack. It is indeed all this. The effect is sure. The premise is simple. It's a basic, primal confrontation, man to man. No excuses are offered, none accepted.
Welcome to the latest edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com.
Looks like a radio station.
Now, here are your hosts, lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers.
Pure athlete, yeah.
A transcend race, hombre.
Matt Butler.
I don't talk man. I back it up.
And we are chock full of that, man.
Damn right.
And Jeff Howe.
It's still real to me, damn it.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
If you're going to blitz, come strong, but don't come at all.
Coming strong with another edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns 24/7. I am Jeff Howe, and it is a victory edition of Longhorn Blitz. Texas gets a win 27-24. Why you laugh, Rod?
You better enjoy them, man. They don't come. It ain't easy to win. Always says, man.
This 2019 team is not going to make anything easy, in case anybody hasn't figured that out already. I've heard people say, man, why can't this team just give me a game where I can sit back and relax? No, that's not going to happen.
No.
You're this deep in a Big 12 play.
That's not their identity right now. Yeah. They're bad in the fourth quarter at times, you know what I mean? And then they start slow at times. That's not this team. They struggle, baby. They struggle.
Anything in your life, you know, whether it's caffeine or spicy food that's going to give you indigestion while you're watching a football game, avoid it when you're watching this team, because it's going to come down to the fourth quarter, probably the last possession, maybe the last minute.
Yeah, I find tequila works if I can fit it in with watching this team.
Yeah, but then you may have a little bit more extreme reactions one way or the other.
They're very extreme. I don't have to do post game, so I'm good.
Or perhaps rot an ice cold Bud Light.
Yes, ice cold Bud Light. Yes, yes.
Pace yourself.
Yes, chase the tequila. With the Bud
you got to get that paper, Rod. You got to make sure we're going to slip that in there.
Thank you, brother.
Talk about the win over K-State and get you ready for a very interesting Iowa State game. Before I bring in the rest of the team, let me just start off by saying, yes, we are a little late this week. We had some inclement weather in Austin, and I game planned with Matt and Rod and figured, you know what, instead of trying to wait it out and see what the weather's going to be like Tuesday morning, which is our normal recording morning, why don't we just push it back?
That was smart.
And since everything was on a two-hour delay, we would have been basically in rush hour traffic trying to get here, so I think we made the right call.
Smart move.
Rod had a meeting on Wednesday, so I was like, you know what, we'll just record Thursday. It's cool. We'll get it out. So, yes, you're getting the blitz. It's a couple of days late, but nonetheless, we are here. Let me bring in the rest of the team. He is the master of the soundboard, the drop machine extraordinaire, Matt Butler. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well, man. You?
Terrific. And lifetime Longhorn, 2002 UT All-American, 2002 semifinalist for the Jim Thorpe Award. Fourth round draft choice of the New York Football Giants back in 2003. Spent his NFL career with the Giants, Lions, Bears, Bucks, Broncos. And a year with the Hamilton Tiger Cats of the CFL, which, as he has said, playing in the CFL is like going into porn if you're an actor.
It is. Nobody ever wanted to be a CFL Hall of Famer. You don't grow up thinking that. You know what I mean? Nobody grows up ever thinking they wanted to get into porn, but there are lots of people in porn because they thought they would get into Hollywood, and then they trickle down and end up in the porn industry.
One of those deals, Rod. If you're willing to do it.
If you're willing to do
it. You can make a nice living out of
somebody it. Somebody will pay you. But, yeah, I didn't want to be in football's version of porn.
But when he was done with football, got himself back to Austin, Texas in the 40 acres where he earned his degree. Whatever that T-ring gets back in his possession, he promises everybody he will wear it proudly. Nevertheless, he is a card-carrying member of DBU, number 21 in your program, number one in your hearts, Mr. Rod Babers.
Thank you. And if you're comparing the sex industry and the flesh industry also to football, I did play in the Arena Football League, which is basically, I mean, then you're basically like you're straight-up sex worker at that point. You're just,
what about
prostitute then.
When there's emerging, like, technology or emerging, like, a new league like the XFL, would that be, like, your webcamming or something? Like,
That's true.
Like, there's emerging technologies you have to deal with. Sort of like the Astros.
That's exactly right. There you go. I agree with this 100%. We could take that analogy very far if we wanted to.
Well, maybe you've got to Matt's point, maybe you've got a nice 9-to-5 on the side. Maybe you're a paralegal.
That's true. Yeah. And then you can XFL
in the
offseason.
Got your 50K for the XFL.
There you go. Boom.
It's amazing. Here we go.
Wish it existed back in my day. I'd have been XFL.
It's like an old sports buffet segment.
You can get all this kind of conversation anytime you want. Just subscribe to Horns 24/7 Podcast. Anywhere you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. Don't forget to like us and leave us a review. State of Recruiting with Bobby Burton and Mike Roach. The Flagship with Chip Brown and Taylor Estes. All that and Longhorn Blitz all on the Horns 24/7 Podcast Network. Rod, so let's start with a 27-24 win over K-State. And I want to start with the offense because I was thinking about the offense the last couple of days. Okay. And here's where I'm at with the offense. Like, I think we are critical of the offense at times, maybe too critical at times.
I think we are too critical.
But to me, and I kind of processed it, and I finally came to this, I think we're harder on the offense because it's the side of the ball that, of all three phases of the game, has the least amount of excuses.
And the highest expectations.
And the most talent.
Exactly.
All of those things.
Which is why we look at them through more of a micro.
Expectations gauge that totally.
Yeah. So there were times where it was clunky offensively, especially in and around the red zone, which they got to get that cleaned up, and we can get into that if you guys want. The penalties are something that also have to get cleaned
penalties,
up.
Penalties, I think, are more a concern for me.
Yeah, you realize, like, this is one of the most penalized teams in the country. However you want to look at it, you want to look at total penalties, total yards, penalties per game, penalty yards per game.
Yeah.
Texas is one of the worst teams in the country.
Beating yourself.
When it comes to penalties. Yes. And then Sam Ellinger's turnover, which there's a great breakdown somebody did on the flagship message board at Horns 24/7 talking about route combinations and basically all the ways that play went wrong. At the end of the day, Rod, I think it's just a bad throw by Sam. It's just if he
Interception?
Yeah.
Just an underthrow. Well, I don't know why he threw that to me. I don't know. I thought it was a bad read and a bad throw.
Yeah.
Both.
He compounded a bad situation by I mean, if he puts that in a certain spot, maybe Duvernay can make a play or at least knock it down.
It's an empty formation, right? Okay. Ends up an empty formation. If you watch it, there's a combo route going on with Colin Johnson, who's in the slot, and Keontae Ingram.
Yep.
Keontae Ingram's wide open.
Yeah.
It's like a second down, I believe, right? It's not a third down.
It's almost like a preconceived read.
I know it was a third down because I remember me screaming and drinking Bud Light and tequila and saying, he didn't have to throw that. He could have thrown underneath and taken the other lead. I know it was really long. But I don't believe it was third and really long.
You don't necessarily have to throw past the sticks. You can just throw to the open guy.
But Keontae Ingram could have easily gotten 8 more yards.
That's my point.
Second and eight.
He could have gotten the first down.
Yep, if you're scheming.
So I don't know why Sam threw that. He there was a great I think it's a saying by – honestly, I think it's Jason Garrett. I hate to say it.
Yeah. Wow. You know we're going. You know we're veering off into strange territory here on this week's show.
But he does have a great saying. He says, we aggressively take what the defense is giving us. Right there, Sam didn't take what the defense was giving. They gave you that underneath, right? Go back and watch it. Man, Kent Ingram is wide open, and just like coasting underneath. And Sam has already made his mind up. It seemed like before that play where he
and
was
those
going.
Are the type of plays that can be either problematic or not even an issue. You just don't know where in the player's mind. It was like, okay, wait, did he just totally have a brain fart to make a one-play mistake? Or is this a trend of he's been going in with preconceived ideas and maybe not having
to pay
for the ramifications? We've seen a lot more lately is my point.
True.
So it makes me just wonder about him at that situation. Are teams seeing what he's doing and actually knowing it? He's falling into a few more consistent trends. Well,
Tim Beck talked about this earlier in the year, that this is the point where Sam is in his maturation process as a quarterback, where he's become so good pre-snap that he, based on reading it before the snap, he knows where to go with the ball.
All the time.
But now it's, okay, you might see a cover two.
Somebody's going to Belichick you.
But now you switch it and they're in a single high, and then that completely changes your read.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just – it's kind
it's
of
a chess match going on between Sam, the OC, and the DC.
Yeah, it's Sam, in theory, you're right. But as the play developed, you were wrong.
Your post-snap read has to confirm your pre-snap read.
Yeah.
And that's what's not happening. And I know you say you're trusting your pre-snap too much, but you still have to actually read the defense post-snap. You can't just assume your pre-snap is always right. And I think maybe that's a step that Sam – that's kind of skipped over because he's been so good in the pre-snap.
Well, and that's a big 4-second change right there mentally that you then have to identify and be able to go with if you are able to do that against the defense.
Yeah.
And I asked Tim Beck about it earlier because, we kind of got in a – I don't say this in a bad way, like just a little back and forth about – I was asking him, some people might – he was explaining that process, and I said, some people might hear that and say that's a bad thing, but in your opinion, is that just kind of a maturation process of quarterbacks? It's like, all quarterbacks go through it. It's just that position, and I know football players talk about it all the time, Rod, but that is a position where you're never done developing. Like, agreed. There's still stuff, like Tom Brady still works through stuff, and guys at the highest levels, yeah. And the Aaron Rodgers and the Drew Breeses of the world still have to go through that
totally
process.
Totally agree. Yeah, yeah. And I think that makes perfect sense, the explanation does. To me, it does, as a football guy. It makes perfect sense to me. Because even, remember the pick he throws under his own goalpost? Remember, was that the Kansas game?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we were like, what the hell was that? That dude never moved. He just threw it, and he threw it so quickly. It was like, he definitely didn't read that because he couldn't have seen that guy that quickly and still threw it. It's like, oh, well, he obviously pre-snap, he figured that backside of that RPO is going to be wide open.
He saw something,
and he figured it'd be there.
And a lot of time when you're selling those RPOs and then flipping around to the other side, it's almost as if you're blind faith, but then you have to identify in that few seconds if he's there or not. But you almost can get into an automated mode
in those type
of plays.
Yeah, especially so because it's all muscle memory.
Exactly.
The RPO is all
and
muscle
that's just
memory.
Where
I can see me being stuck halfway in between, like, oh!
Oh, yeah, no, I'm like, too indecisive. I'd be sitting there in the
room. I would suck as an RPO quarterback because I'd be like, I thought he was right there.
I'd be Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, exactly.
have you seen some of those dudes?
That is a great description. Yes. God, you'd be Mr. Trubisky.
So, we talk about the penalties and we talk about the one turnover Sam Ehlinger had. But, Rod, at the end of the day, you talk about an offense that racked up 477 yards.
Hey, Keontae Ingram, baby.
K-State.
You got good Keontae.
Got off 65 plays and
– well, I love the offensive game plan. Can I say that?
That's where I was going with this.
I loved it. I loved it. I loved it because everything that we've been calling for on the show, the 10 personnel in a situation other than 2 minutes, only time we've seen it is versus LSU in a 2 minute situation. This is the first time we've seen it actually in, you know.
They opened the game with it.
Yeah, like started the game with it. And I think it was something that they leaned heavily on. They used Malcolm Epps as their flex tight end, something that we had seen like a little bit in the Kansas game. But I said we wanted to see more of that. You saw more of that. I don't know why they haven't used Jake Smith more in that role. But trust me, when you get a healthy Jordan Whittington and a Jake Smith who is broken through the freshman wall in that package, 10 personnel in the field with 4 wide receivers, 1 back, 0 tight end, that is going to be scary. And what they figured out is, of course you can run the football out of 10 personnel. That long run by Keontae Ingram, that touchdown run where they run the speed option. Dude, the numbers advantage in the box is so evident and so obvious. It's exactly what you want. Texas just simply outnumbered them in the box. Once the guy took Sam Ehlinger and took him out, nobody was on the pitch, man, and Keontae Ingram's up the sideline. Dude, you can run. In my opinion, I think you can run. I think they average 5.9 yards per rush out of the 10 personnel. You can run really well with Sam as your plus one out of this package because he's such a bruising force running.
It adds multiple mismatches because not only that, but then you get Colin Johnson in the slot on other side, which is just so. And we got to see some of last year in the Oklahoma game. You would see some, or in the Big 12 championship Oklahoma game was one where you could see him being used in different spots, and him getting the mismatch in the slot just seems in college to be such a huge mismatch that you just be able to take advantage of it as many times as possible. So having that there and maybe getting an advantage in the run game, and then just the mental consumption of the defense to have to identify something they haven't seen on defense. Because 11's good and 11's great, but if you're talking about the mental stress that a defense, you're helping them if you're just coming out and they don't have to identify anything new, and then you're already to step two in your mind as a defender. Instead, now there's a recalibration there for a split second and a little bit of questions.
Totally agree.
It's what we've talked about, Rod, and in theory, there's nothing wrong with the offense as productive as they've been. But
no,
you're at
11
the point
personnel,
now,
they still were more productive in 11 personnel than they were in 10 personnel, and that's not the point.
You're at the point now though where there's enough film out on you that you almost became too predictable. Yep. I understand the mentality of we're going to do what we want to do, but sometimes you're doing that to your detriment. You have your staple concepts in this offense, like your inside-outside zone,
your
bubble screen, 4 verts. Yeah. You can do all that stuff. Just dress it up differently.
Exactly right. And you're about to go against better defenses, right, that second half of the schedule. And not saying LSU wasn't great. LSU was awesome, but there wasn't a lot of film out there on what Texas was going to be. That was the second game of the season. Mm-hmm. Like you pointed out now, 7, 8 games in, now there's a ton of film, and you're going up against Gary Patterson Patterson, best defensive mind in the Big 12, arguably. Then John Heacock, who's probably right up there in terms of respectability of his defensive acumen. And then Baylor, which is playing some of the best defensive football in the Big 12 right now. Yeah, those teams are going to be there to figure out your tendencies. But like you said, you just dress it up in 10 personnel, and now they go, oh, damn. They start freaking out because they got to make sure that they allocate resources to defend those four wide receivers and all that speed on the field. I mean, there were seven targets, I think, to Colin Johnson, and he had seven receptions. Had arguably, I think, maybe his best game of the year. And it was a simple reason why. They just moved him around, and the defense couldn't always identify on every down where he was. Right. This sideline or that sideline. And I was like, oh, no, he's in the slot.
Cornerback on him, right? Cornerback on
exactly.
him. Exactly. But, like, it's
like,
so no. easy.
Oh, man, safety on him. Oh, linebacker might be on him. And they even put him in motion once, and it was a beautiful thing. They put him in motion once. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Oh, man, it was so beautiful. I saw Colin Johnson in motion, and I got
happy
giddy,
we
like
did
a little girl.
Motion.
Like, I was like, baby, they put Colin
We're
Johnson
doing
in
things.
Motion. And I don't even think it amounts to anything, but I was just excited.
No, yeah. Which, you know, moving him around, it creates situations that, you know, I love the game plan from the, and this is kind of, Matt, I don't think we disagree on football, but some you kind of are an analytical mind, and I've got friends that are analytical minds, and I get accused all the time. They're like, Jeff, you're old school. I'm like, I don't know, maybe that's offensive lineman to me. Like, I just want to just have a good run game because there's something about being able to impose your will on people that's sexy about football to me.
Totally well, agree. And if you can do that, then you can always defeat the opponent if you're literally able to push them around. Right. But when not everybody can do that.
But exactly. I look at what K-State did, Rod. And going into this game, I started looking at the numbers. K-State defense isn't an elite defense.
No.
It's pretty average.
No, their offense complements the defense
exactly.
so well.
When you start, like I looked, the stat that really blew me away and really made me dive deeper into it, I started looking at yards per play allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Only Texas and Texas Tech were worse among Big 12 defenses going into that game than K-State. And, and then you start looking at it, I'm like, well, TCU moved the ball. OU eventually moved the ball. Like, everybody's moved the ball on K-State.
Yeah.
It's just at some point with the way they play, you're going to shoot yourself
right
in the foot.
Place.
Or they're going to have three 12-play drives. And it's like we talk about, like Chris Klieman's not doing anything different than Bill Snyder did. You get in a game like Oklahoma did, and all of a sudden you realize, crap, we're down 21 and there's 8 minutes left. Like, we just don't have enough time.
They suffocate you because, like you said, you just run out of – I think you run more out of plays because they just – I think the opponents averaged, 57, 58 mm-hmm. plays. So I agree with you. The defense wasn't spectacular. But because they played great complementary football, and even with special teams, they're hitting yardage, all those things, it helped the defense tremendously. But, Texas could have exposed that defense, and I knew they were going to expose them, especially if they were able to spread them out.
Right.
That's why we kept saying, man, throw the 10 personnel. You were saying throw, and I'm agreeing with you. I think they should throw, I think the 21 and the 20 personnel needs to come out next. I would like to see it. Now you got two running backs, potentially three running backs with Jordan Whittington. If you want to play him, I think he'll probably play in the last like two or three games of the season. I think they want to consider his red shirt. You know what I mean?
I think at this point you have to.
Yeah.
At this point you
have
to. It'd
be irresponsible not to. So mm-hmm. I think that you might see him in the bowl game if they make the Big 12 title game and then like that Tech game or something. You know what I mean?
Well,
maybe the Baylor game.
Because
maybe.
What this staff has to consider now is the Big 12 championship game counts as a game
in the
where you can
exactly.
lose your red shirt. So
you count backwards, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think this staff has to look at it. Maybe do you get through this weekend and say, let's say Texas beats Iowa State.
Yeah.
And then you're saying, okay, maybe do you use him against Baylor?
And then don't against Tech.
And then don't against Tech. So you have him in the Big 12 championship game. So now you're at the point where – and it could be a deal, Rod, too, with Jordan Whittington that maybe they've talked to him and maybe at this point –
they just redshirted him.
All involved parties – well, maybe all involved parties don't care. And they're like, look, if he hits the ceiling, he's not going to need the extra year anyway. So they'll just use him.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. I don't know what they're thinking, but I think we're in agreement that they're counting backwards and they want to keep the redshirt available as an option, period. And I agree with that. But my point, when you get him back, you have three running backs. Your idea about the 20 personnel, the 21 personnel, which we've seen, by the way, we saw it in the spring game, 8:49 left in the second quarter spring game, and they go 21 personnel, empty formation. They did that with Jordan Whittington and Keontae Ingram. I want to see those three packages as, and now it's your base, 11 is still your base. You run that 60% of the time. But just a little tweak, throwing in some 10, little tweak, throwing in a little 20 and 21. I think this Texas offense could be really, really impressive with Jake Smith added to the mix at one point, Jordan Whittington added to the mix at one point. And by the end of the year, with a healthy Colin Johnson, knock on wood, and Devin Duvernay, dude, that's a nasty mix all in the field at one time. Nasty, man.
Yeah, you bring up the tight end, and I think this game gave us a really good idea of what Reese Lehto does really well, which is basically, as long as he's not, and I don't say this disparagingly, as long as he's not, as long as he's attached to the formation and being an inline blocker, or you're letting him do his dirty work between the hashes, he's very effective.
He's basically a fullback most of the game, that inline fullback for you.
The usage of the tight ends, we talked about it, right, all year. Like Cade Brewer. You can't tell Cade Brewer go be Andrew Beck. You're doing a disservice to Cade Brewer. Mm-hmm. If you want to use 11 personnel and have him out there, then use him in a way that maximizes his skill set.
Yeah.
Same thing with Reese Leto. I don't want him.
You don't
in,
split
I don't
out
want him in the slot.
Wide.
I don't want him trying
to. That's why we have.
I don't want him trying to stock block corners.
That. Totally agree.
Yes. Yeah. You want him to be a part of a counterplay, kick out a defensive. Great. Let him do that
totally
all day.
Agree that.
You want him to get to second level, try to hook a linebacker? Great. Let him do that all day.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I think that's what that game plan amounted to, in my opinion. It's like, no, let's let everybody do what they do best. Let's just let them do that. And that's exactly what it was offensively.
The offense would have been even more productive, Rod, had it not been for the penalties. And had it not been for the turnover.
Oh, real quick, I gotta get this. I hope I got the play right. Okay, did you guys remember this play? Because I marked it. Okay, it is the third drive. It was a Samuel Cosmi holding penalty that brought it back. 29-yard gain by Devin Duvernay.
Mm-hmm.
It was the third drive of the game offensively, and it was a 1st and 10.
Mm-hmm.
They went 3-by-1 formation. It was beautiful. They lined Duvernay up as the number 3 wide receiver on the trip side. Remember that play that LSU ran on Texas where they lined up, I forgot which receiver it was.
Chase.
It was either Chase or Jefferson. They lined him up as the number 3, and they run him a deep drag route all the way to the opposite sideline.
Behind
then,
the defense.
Yes, behind the defense, and Joe Burrow hits him on the other sideline. Texas did that. They stole a play.
Yes, I remember that exact play, watching that with my dad and being like, well, because it's so good because it pulls the whole defense and then your linebackers get sucked up and then you're all by yourself on the backside of the
offense. It was great. And then they end up calling it back for holding.
The one you're talking about, Rob, that was the last play of the first quarter.
Yeah. Last play of the first quarter. Okay, yeah. Man, it was great, and it was holding. I was like, no! It worked, but at least it's on film now. But, man, they got to come back to that. It was a beautiful play design, but I think they just stole it from LSU. But they should be stealing plays all the time.
Yes.
Hell, that play that K-State scored on your defense where the Malik Knowles
the
in
wheel.
The backfield.
The wheel, yeah.
Yeah, the one where they motion men into the backfield, and then he runs the, I don't know, half-wheel route out of the backfield. Texas should steal that play. Steal that play and run Devin Duvernay or Jake Smith on that play. Steal it. I would still play. I still like 4-5 plays with my opponents a week. I'd still be open about it.
I literally used to draw up plays and mail them to Jimmy Johnson as like a third grader. It's like, Rod, you should just go and be like, hey, Tom, here's a link. This play, take it, and just send them in.
I don't know. Somebody should, because that was a beautiful play. I know we'll talk about the defense here, but I love that play.
You know how many teams have stole the offensive tackle screen pass from Texas?
Oh, that's true.
I've seen SMU run it. A couple small colleges run it.
Come on, man. I don't know. That was the first time I can kind of – well, I know Texas has stolen an exam. They stole stuff from Lincoln Riley, but that was a great – I like that. That was really good.
There was also one similar to the Cosmi play where the dude was doing cartwheels. Did you see the lineman do cartwheels?
No,
this happened like just in one of those midweek MAC games. I think it was like last night.
MAC-tion.
Yeah, it's literally dude's out there and he puts his arms up as if he's going to be a receiver, and then he just does a cartwheel backwards.
Wow.
He's an offensive tackle.
That is awesome.
Yeah. What was it? I remember, was it Arkansas State maybe playing Miami one time, and they tried to run a fake punt, and like there was a guy in the slot who acted like he like got shot. He just like fell down. You guys remember what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Dude, that stuff works,
people,
man.
People on the ground.
Somebody goes on
like,
the ground, for some reason, your eyes lose them. It's so weird. I can't even tell you, but it happens. Yeah.
Or like that pseudo kind of fair catch North Texas ran against Arkansas last year.
I think I remember that, too.
Or we need a new ball, and I'm then going to run sprint down for a touchdown, you know?
Ooh, real quick, did you see the one Tua had in the LSU game?
I heard
about
it.
He claps on the snap.
I don't think
he claps on the snap, and then, he kills the play. He's acting like he's killing the play. And while he's doing a look back to the sideline, claps, gets the snap, and Devontae Smith's wide open.
Nice. I like that. It's good. Like the Marino, the fake kill.
Fake clock play.
Fake kill the snap. Yeah.
Yeah. All kinds of good stuff we get into. But anyway, to get us back to Texas and K-State, I mentioned the run game, Rod, and there's a couple things I like about it. One, we talk about Texas having that K-State model where you're protecting your defense. The Texas defense only faces 53 plays in this game, and that's part of how you help a defense that's struggling. Well, don't expose them so much.
Yep.
Value time of possession and maximizing drives and being really good on third down. Doing the things that we saw Texas at times do last year. They've added the explosive element. But that 13-play drive at the end of the game, Rod, shows that they haven't gotten explosive at the expense of losing the identity of when you really need to, can you be mentally sharp enough to grind out of the kind of drive you need to grind out that's going to burn the last 6.5 minutes off the clock.
Totally agree. They basically beat K-State at K-State football in a lot of respects.
Yeah.
Time of possession, long, sustained drives.
And the other thing that the run game does, especially when Keonta Ingram goes for 139, and I asked him after the game, I said, what made the difference in the run game in the second half? And he said, well, we actually ran the ball. Just being That's committed true. To the run. And what
well,
it
I would argue they committed to the run because you were having a good game. When true. You're not having a good game, it's hard to commit to the run because we don't have a lot of running backs. So true. That would be my counter to Keonta and his – it's smart response.
I'm picking up what you're putting down. But the other thing it does, Rod, is it opens up the RPO game. And maybe they've run RPOs more in other games, but I can't remember it being as effective as it was.
I don't know if they've run more. I think I saw more in this game than I've seen.
Yeah, it, like the first month you didn't see many.
You didn't
the
see many.
Past month you've seen more.
I've seen. Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe the Larry Fedora influence now is starting to
So the combination of getting Colin Johnson on the move with the effectiveness and the dedication to the run game.
Yeah.
Now when you go RPO, it gets you matchups like, oh, crap, we got a corner one-on-one with Colin Johnson on a slant. That's not a battle we want to be in.
Yep. No, I agree. That's a good point, and the way it all kind of came together.
Yeah.
Yep. No.
And I asked Colin Johnson about it after the game, and he, like, cracked a smile. I was like, yeah, man, it's wide open. He's like, because it's only natural. If you're running the ball well and you see run action, you put the ball in the running back's breadbasket.
Every time.
That safety's going to have to come down.
Yeah.
He's got to respect it, and then you pull it out, and boom, it's open.
Yeah. And the only way to go is to go true man-to-man. If you go true man-to-man with no help at all, then that's even more vulnerability on the outside with Colin Johnson. No, I agree. It's pretty impenetrable.
Yeah. The only other thing I want to touch on with the offense is the offensive line. And I think some people took issue with Tom Herman on Monday saying the offensive line was serviceable once Junior Anguilau went after the game. And maybe that's Tom Herman not wanting to say, yeah, we were really good without Junior Anguilau on the field, a guy that started 9 games for us and been pretty good as a redshirt freshman. I think people forget that about Junior Anguilau sometimes. Oh, why is he having problems? Well, he's a redshirt freshman, and in a perfect world, you're probably not starting redshirt freshman offensive lineman. But I like that combination, Rod, for two reasons. One, the downgrade, if you will, from Derek Kerstetter to Denzel Okafor at right tackle, there's not that much of a drop-off. And two, kicking Kerstetter inside when you're talking about an offensive line that's been having trouble picking up stunts and movement and just general communication issues, being able to put a veteran guy next to Zach Shackelford to help you facilitate your communication. You know, Parker Braun is experienced, not an experienced pass blocker. So basically, you're almost handicapping yourself in some of those situations because you've got a guy in Parker Braun that in some cases is seeing some stuff for the first time in terms of playing in this offense where your blocking rules are completely different than they are in a triple option. And then a redshirt freshman. Now the liability, there's not as much on Parker Braun in terms of having to facilitate communication because now you've got Kerstetter in there. I just think the drop-off at right tackle isn't as steep as it otherwise would be in some cases or that we've seen in some years. And your communication, I think, is probably better with Kerstetter playing closer to the ball.
Some of you would argue it's probably an upgrade at guard for you.
In terms of communication and veteran presence, yeah, absolutely.
Do you think, I'm talking about as a player, do you think is Kerstetter a better guard than Anguilau?
I think Anguilau's a run blocker this year has been really good.
Okay.
But, again, you're talking about a retro. And Junior Anguilau played in a triple option offense in high school, so
very true.
A lot of this stuff he's seeing for the first time.
Yeah.
So it's not that I don't think – I'm trying to phrase this the right way because I'll die on the hill. I think Anguilau is a really good player and is going to be a really, really good player by the time, to channel my inner Tom Herman, a really, really good player by the time he's done at Texas. But so I don't think you've upgraded players. I think your situation, though, is probably better because, again, it just facilitates communication. And we know Kerstetter's at the point in his career, Rod, kind of where you think of a guy like a David Snow comes to mind, you know, a guy that maybe doesn't have like an elite ceiling but doesn't really have like any glaring noticeable deficiencies either.
Yeah.
That's what you're
doing. He's going to get beat. Like, everybody at this level gets beat. Like, usually Sam Cosmi gets beaten.
Shaq was the only one who graded out as a champion,
championship
I think,
level
in that game. So, we've
seen Sam Cosmi.
Other than Sam Cosmi.
I saw PFF had their top 100 prospects for the 2020 draft. Mm. They got Sam Cosmi as a top 40 draft-eligible prospect.
Mm. Yeah.
That just shows you, like, the national respect he's got. Yeah. But bottom line is, I would disagree with Tom Herman to say the offensive line was serviceable. I thought they were good, maybe even damn good. Even with Angulo,
I would say that K-State didn't throw a lot of stunts and twists at him, though.
Virtual.
I don't know why they didn't. That didn't make any sense. The one thing that Texas struggled. Yo, Oklahoma's only got one sack since they sacked Texas
nine
times.
I'll tell you, we're probably going to see a lot of those.
I'm not joking. They only got one.
Yeah.
I know it sounds like a joke, but it's not. That's how hard it was for Texas to block that the loop stunts and the twists. And everybody after has been doing it, and people before were doing it. And if you're K-State, it's like, well, why didn't you do that? So I'm not, like rooting for K-State. I'm just like, K-State didn't really do that a lot.
And it's sort of a gift for Texas that those type of things go unnoticed sometimes, but they're worth pointing out because you can almost expect to see that against Iowa State, against Baylor.
Yeah.
And those are the type of things that, okay, well, you can get away with it.
And the offensive lineman went down.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, like, we're
really going to attack it.
Some stuff in the K-State game plan to me was, like, dumb for me.
And I'm glad
we'll
you brought
the other side. Well, yeah. And the fact that they opened up that game, since we're going to talk Texas defense then, they opened up Chris Klieman. Honestly, Chris Klieman's a good coach, but that was the dumbest game plan I've ever seen going up against the Texas defense. You opened up the game. You threw on 10 of your first 15 passes. So all of your film study, it basically confirmed everything that we've been saying. You throw on the Texas defense, you throw on them early, you throw on them often, and you throw it on them deep. By the way, they didn't throw it deep. They only had two passes. They threw 20 yards or more down the field. Yeah.
Completed one
of them, and it was a touchdown on Brandon Jones. So everything was working. And you threw on 10 of your first 15 plays, 11 of your first 16. And then for some reason, you decided to revert back to K-State football after you got up 14-0 and decided to run the ball on early downs 55% of the time.
Went Gundy.
Look on Matt Butler's face right now. Like,
it went Gundy,
he
dude.
Went Gundy. He's like, dude, what are you doing? You got Texas right where you want him. Yeah. And then you – so the Texas defense, listen, they did great. We'll talk about the adjustments.
We'll get to the good here in a minute.
But they were not tested. That was not a test for the Texas defense. And by the way, Skylar Thompson having his best game ever as a passer. I mean, everything pointed to like, well, dude, just keep throwing it. And he did not want to do it. And I was like, Chris Klieman.
And you're playing without your leading rusher, too.
Chris Klieman. What are you doing?
You're in the Big 12, dude.
Your film study, though, you're blue. Your first 15 plays, your scripted plays, told me you did your research. You listen to the Longhorn Blitz podcast, one or the other. Either way, it's good research. And you knew exactly how to attack Texas. And your quarterback was playing lights out. And everything was working. And you just decided, I'm going to be K-State. We're going to be K-State today.
Should have just rewound the game script
you
and done it all in 15
again. You just kept
doing
the same thing you did. So to me, that's why I wasn't disappointed. I think Texas did a great job. But they weren't tested. So My concerns are still there about the Texas defense
and the structural integrity of it. Like, but this was a situation where we've seen
they
Texas at times
yes,
in some games
but they
and
weren't out because Chris Klieman, that was a stupid game plan. Mike Gundy's a brilliant coach, so is Chris Klieman. But those game plans against Texas were stupid. That's why they both lost.
Well, I think you're right to be concerned, Rob, because as we talked about, this defense isn't going to be, air quotes, good this year. But I saw enough in that game that leads me to believe they have a chance down the stretch to be good enough.
No. We'll get into the adjustments.
We'll get into
the adjustments.
But it's not just that. We talk about percentages. It's not just that K-State tried to run the ball. It's the way they tried to run it. Which the one thing this Texas defense that I can say they do well, and the film study will back me up on it, on early downs, between the combination of Keandre Coburn at nose and with the way Juwan Mitchell and Deli Adeoye play, nobody's just been able to line up and run the ball at Texas.
Oh, yeah.
When they've run the ball, it's been hitting them on the edges, and that's when we get into our conversation about structural integrity of the defense and personnel at the deficiencies you've got at linebacker and your personnel at nickels and jokers and all that stuff. But they just tried to line up and pound Texas, and I'm like, if I'm going to attack Texas, that's the very last thing I'm going to do.
Hitting edges, right? Yeah. You know how to attack. Yeah. Make sure your quarterback is in the running game. They didn't do anything. That was a crazy game plan by Klieman. I don't get it.
Let's take Rice out of the equation. There's seven games worth of film that showed you exactly how you need to attack Texas.
And they did.
And your opening script, like you said, Ron, was brilliant. It showed that you clearly did the research.
The opening script, I was like, oh, we are so screwed. We are screwed.
They're moving the ball.
Scott Thompson is feeling good about himself. Well, Brandon Jones is having a bad game. Our
was
best
Texas
looked
good on the lines of scrimmages, but they were throwing the ball, and it made me be like, oh, well, maybe this isn't going to matter, even if we have the advantage on the lines of scrimmages.
Crazy.
And even like you said, Jeff, like in previous games, it would lend you to do that. If you look at just the straight numbers, the only thing Texas is above average at is like on the D-line is like line yards per carry
exactly.
and stuff. Right? Like everything literally across the board would be there. So it's like, oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, I didn't get it. But I like the adjustments, though, and they were subtle. There was more four-man front and more four-down front, and I think you'll continue to see that, and I like that. And we'll get into a little deeper why I think he needs to do that on early downs versus Iowa State a little bit more.
You're going to because Iowa State's another team that's going to run heavy personnel.
And they're
going to
have multiple tight ends out there, exactly. I did like the fact they played more zone coverage behind some of the blitzes, so you got some zone blitzes. Not as much delayed blitzes from the secondary. A lot more blitzes in the second half that came just from the linebackers in the front seven. And also, listen, I think Todd Orlando is starting to be a little bit more conservative with his blitzes. I counted 6 third and 9-plus yards to go that Texas had to defend. He blitzed on 5 or 6 of those.
Yeah.
But it was not a zero blitz. It was a blitz with help. Exactly. It was a man. It was a cover one with a safety over the top or a robber. So he's just getting a little bit more. I think there's the middle ground, the compromise. There's subtle changes, but I think, honestly, with you and the health, I'm with you. They're not going to be great, but they're going to be able to make a key stop here and there, and that's pretty much what they've needed, the games they've lost.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with this defense. Like, if my message to the Texas defense, if I'm Tom Herman, would be like, look, I know you're not going to be great, right? We know that. But just be good enough when it matters.
Yep.
And that's really what you need from this defense. Like, and that's why I wrote the article during the bye week about the fourth quarter issues. Because, look, I think, Rod, and gosh, man, Twitter's just kind of its own just little – kind of toxic
pool
of whatever. But basically the people that were on the bandwagon of it's been all about injuries, like they feel completely validated. They're, oh, see, you got Caden Stearns back, BJ Foster back, defense is fine.
That was a big part of it.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. But then there's the other group that said, no, it's not that, it's this. It's like, look, it's been all of it, right?
Yeah,
we
it's
talked
not
about
binary.
It.
It's not gumbo. One or the other.
It's a gumbo of it all, baby. It's all that issue.
It's just like in years when we talked about why under Sean Watson was the Texas offense bad? Is it his play calling? Is it the offensive line? Is it Tyrone Swoops? Is it lack of imagination on offense? And the answer is yes. It's all of it.
All of it. Yes. Not one person to blame. Yes. You can't just fix it with one thing.
We need somebody to blame so we can pull our pitchforks out. You brought up Twitter.
Everybody wants their pound of flesh.
We want a blame game. We want to point at somebody. And it's like, well, the truth is it's much more complex than that.
Yes.
And Todd Orlando didn't become an imbecile overnight. And, you know what I mean? So I agree with you.
I don't want to get on a soapbox here. That's really my goal with this podcast. Look, there's people that know more football out there than I do. But my goal with this podcast, from my point of view, is I just want to make you try to look at it from a different perspective and say, oh, blame this guy, blame this guy. No. Just kind of pull back from it because I think as fans you do it because I've been in the fan realm of it. But even as a writer, I think you can get too tunnel visioned on it and be too close to it that whole you can't see the forest through the trees. Maybe I'm using the wrong analogy here. But
No, you're right.
Whole, it's both of those.
No deal. Sometimes you just got to pull back and be like, okay, let me just kind of take a 30,000-foot view of this and see what's going on. And you can see that there's a lot – when things aren't going right, there's a lot of reasons why. Just like when things are going well, there's a lot of reasons why they're going well. But, Rod, you talk about the adjustments with his defense, and Todd Orlando's going to keep blitzing, but I think what I like about it is now you've got a better idea. That K-State game gave me – a better feeling. Okay, Todd Orlando's getting a better idea of what his – you can knock him for taking 8 or 9 games to get there, but now I think he's got a really good idea of what his personnel can do and what they can't do.
Yes, no, I agree with that too. But you know what? I think that improved with him toward the end of every year. He started to figure things out a little bit better. And there's an adjustment period, but 17 and 18 were like that too. One thing also that I liked, and we talked about this, and we talked about you got those corners now that are playing relatively well, by the way. Deshaun Jameson, Playing the hands, baby.
There you go.
I knew you had to love hands, that. I thought about you when I saw that.
Man, give him some pride. I don't know.
I was like, look at that DB High alum playing the hands.
Yes. Baby, play the hands, man. You can't always play the man, but you can play them hands.
Just looked it all the way in, knocked it out.
I felt proud that moment.
Did you feel like the proud uncle, Rod?
Well, I've been a DB High guy yourself. I've ranted on the show about, you got to figure out how you're going to play a guy depending on the situation. If you're playing it from a slot, where's your leverage, all that kind of, what the coverage is. And I'm glad, it seems like he thought that through. My leverage point, everything. And you can tell he was looking at those hands.
It was a tape piece.
Yeah, as soon as the hand, it really was. That's a great, it was a teachable moment. Yes. You could put that on film right now and teach a young DB. But he played the slot.
Rod's footwork.
He's playing the slot when they use their 7 DB package.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that because our point was, you're deep at cornerback now. And now Jalen Green's going to be out for the first half. But you're deep at cornerback now. You probably got 3 starting corners, you feel like now.
Yeah.
All right. At first, it was something that was a liability. Now it may be a strength for you. Hey, move one of those guys inside. See if they can play the nickel or the dime for you. And he did it with DeSean Jameson in that 7 DB package. So I like that. I like him in the slot better than, some of those other safeties you're going to put out there.
Well, just
and let
getting
them
these bodies back gives you options, which you didn't have before, which is so valuable to have, because before you're just trying to get bodies that are
competent enough to
do something. And now, when you start to throw in, now you get a Chris Brown back, probably.
Chris Brown back.
Then
yeah.
we already saw him. Look at Havoc plays from this last game. You got 2.5 from B.J. Foster, as if he's maybe getting healthy. Brandon Jones had 2, but look, I noticed these Havoc plays from the D-line and linebackers, which was actually pretty impressive. It was one of the better performances for Texas all year.
Because he's using them better.
Yes,
he's using them better.
A day away.
They're not always in coverage where they don't need to be. They were, I think, early on in the first quarter.
Well,
but now,
your better guys behind them.
He's working downhill. Yeah, and you know what? Now you got your DBs back, to your point.
It's
married
together.
Yeah. Totally agree with you, man. That's a really good point.
I think that's where Chris Brown is going to help you getting him back at the second level, because kind of piggybacking on what you just said, Matt, you can be more aggressive with Mitchell and Adeyewe and have them do – look, you're forced to play those guys as your 2 inside linebackers. Would you like to have a Gary Johnson or a Malik Jefferson, a guy that's a little more versatile, maybe a little more speed-oriented guy? Mm-hmm. Yes, in a perfect world you would, but you don't have that right now. But Todd Orlando could do what he wants to do with those guys, what he needs to do with those guys, knowing, okay, now – you feel better about Caden Stearns, B.J. Foster, Chris Brown being there to clean things up than Montrell Estelle, Tyler Owens, and whoever.
Yeah, and even when you had DeSean Jameson inside, honestly, if you'd had one of those safeties inside, truth is, that might be a touchdown, because it was a really well-thrown ball. I mean, the ball was right there in Sean's hands, and you just had one of your best coverage players there. So I totally agree with Matt and you. I think it's just helping Orlando get more options and put players in better positions now to succeed. Those linebackers, they don't need to be taking steps back. They need to be going forward most of the time, whether blitzing or whether run stuff. And they're in coverage against these tight ends. That's probably going to be a problem.
And it's
versus
worth
Iowa
pointing
State.
Out too. Not only are they, you have more options now, but these players now are in these situations where you don't necessarily maybe have to have as many reps. And if you're playing in a situation you're comfortable with, you aren't as prone to injury in both of those type of situations.
Yep.
So it's just something where you finally maybe getting to see a healthy defense whenever it's like the last grasp for a decent shot at the season.
Totally agree.
That gives us a great place to talk Iowa State.
Woo!
Because, Rod, when you start talking about Iowa State, we can start with Brock Purdy and Breece Hall looks like a really, really good running back. Everything he was cracked up to be is
they're impressive on film, man.
And, man, they're wide receivers, honestly.
They're better than you think. Yep.
Between Milton and John, like, those are – they might have the 2 best receivers in the country that nobody talks about.
They're top 10 in the Big 12 in receiving yards per game. Both of them are. They're like 9 and 10 or something
very
like that.
Very impressive.
No, they are.
Yeah, Tariq Milton's leading the Big 12 in yards per catch over CeeDee Lamb. I think CeeDee Lamb's at 22.3, Milton's at 22.7.
And by the way,
and DeShante Jones is like, I think, 4th in the league in catches per game.
Hakeem Butler averaged 22 yards a catch. So we talked about how you beat a Texas defense, throw it early, throw it often, and throw it deep. They can throw it deep. We know that. They got a deep threat.
This will be a much, and plus when you're talking about, no disrespect to Skylar Thompson's fans and family who might be listening to this, but it's a different animal when you're going against Brock Purdy, and this is not the same Brock Purdy Texas saw last year when he was a freshman quarterback, really caught in the headlights. I mean, look, he had 1 start on the road last year before Texas.
I remember that.
It was at Kansas, like in an 11 a.m. game, and as you guys know, as hyped as that crowd was for the Iowa State game last year, especially think about everything that went into that game last year. Like, you knew it was potentially a big game because I think two top 15 teams, but then like 20 minutes before kickoff or whatever it was, everybody realizes that West Virginia loses in Stillwater, and basically the winner of this game is in the Big 12 championship game. It changes the stakes, so Brock Purdy looked like a true freshman.
I remember that.
Not the case, Rod. His numbers are freaking outstanding. Like, as good as Sam Ellinger's been, put Brock Purdy's numbers right next to Sam Ellinger's, and they're just as good in some cases.
I said on my show yesterday, and I got in trouble when I said this like in 09 or something, I think I said it. I said in 09, I said if RG3 was at Texas, he'd be doing exactly what Colt McCoy is doing, if not more, and he'd win the Heisman. And people were like, what the hell are you talking about, man? RG3's not as good as Colt. And I was like, yes, I'm sorry, he is. Yeah. And everybody was like, that's crazy. In college, I was like, yeah, he was. And I said the same thing yesterday about Brock Purdy and Sam Ellinger. I said, honestly, if Brock Purdy was here at Texas, resources he got and the weapons, he'd be doing just what Sam Ellinger's doing, if not more. He's just that good.
He's
except
that good.
I think they all have their own strengths, but he's probably got more overall raw arm talent than Sam. The ball kind of comes off his hands with a little bit more spin, a little more velocity. I think Sam is a better runner in terms of he's in the red zone, powerful, kind of unique ability that Purdy's just kind of he's a dual threat guy because he's second on team in rushing. But he's
Purdy's,
closer to
Purdy's
functional
got a
ability.
Purdy's got a little more wiggle, I think.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So they're different, but, man, I'm telling you, that's how good he is. I'll give you a Brock Purdy stat. I love this Brock Purdy stat. Okay, so, oh, yeah, I got this one. Okay, so Brock Purdy had a 6-touchdown performance versus OU. Second time this season he's had at least 6 touchdowns in a game. He had 1 rushing, 5 passing. Joe Burrow is the only other player in the FBS with multiple 6-touchdown games this year.
Mm-hmm.
Brock Purdy and Joe Burrow.
Yeah. Good company.
Brock Purdy is damn good.
Dude, Purdy is the real deal, man. He is, he's the real deal.
But, Rob, we talk about Tariq Milton. We talk about DeShante Jones. And those guys, like I said, they're probably the two best receivers in the country. When you talk about the best receiver groups in the country, you talk about Alabama, you talk about LSU. Nobody talks about Iowa State, and I'm telling you, you should.
I think Pro Football Focus had him pretty high in their rankings. I think they had him in the top 15.
And then Breece Hall, he's got 7 rushing touchdowns in his last 4 games. He's averaging 132 yards a game over his last 4. But to me, Rod, and we talk about this with Tom Herman and the pro spread offense and the tight end being the position that binds the pro elements with the spread elements.
Kolar.
Texas has not had anything close to what Iowa State's got with Charlie Kolar.
Yeah.
He is a top 10 tight end in the country in pretty much every statistical category.
Yeah.
Todd Orlando threw that G word out there to describe Charlie Kolar.
Mm.
Said it's a lot like defending the guy that used to wear 87 for the Patriots because he can go get jump balls. He can be a matchup nightmare.
That means I don't want to see a linebacker on him.
No.
All right. I don't want to see it. And honestly, you might want to watch about putting smallish DBs on them.
No, I was thinking, you need to get your Joneses, your Stearns,
Foster.
I was on with Chad and Kevin on the horn
on
Wednesday afternoon, and Chad said, what's a matchup that you don't want to see Texas in with Charlie Kolar? I said, if you pre-snap, if you feel like it's going to end up being a linebacker on him, burn a timeout.
Joseph Asai is the only linebacker I may trust in that situation, and honestly, I still think that's a disadvantage. And that Joseph Asai is the best defense player we got.
I may not burn a timeout on that one, but if I see like Deli Adeyeway or Juwan Mitchell on Kolar, I'm burning a timeout.
That's worth a timeout because that could be a touchdown.
Yeah, it should be a rule that you have at those points. Like at certain situations, you rarely see like corners shadow somebody in like the NFL, but like in this situation in college, when you only have a certain amount of body types, like you could see just B.J. Foster shadowing him or somebody like if Jones or Stearns.
No, that's a great point. I could see you putting your safety as a like he rotates to that side over the top of him all the time. And I think we've seen Texas do that with other premier wide receivers. And actually, I know that wide receivers are good. Tariq Milton?
Mm-hmm.
He's the only one that worries me that he may get deep on one of our corners. I think our corners can hold up relatively well against them in just normal coverage. I don't think they're play-breaking type players, but I would put somebody over the top of Milton, or at least somebody who knows, like, hey, you know, that guy can beat you deep because he can just run by guys. He's legit speedster. But, yeah, I think the Kolar thing, because they're going to throw out a heavy, which means you got to match. You got to try to match their heavy, and I think Tarlando may try to do that. If you do that, it could also be to your detriment because – Kolar, they can just chunk action out of
the All it's going to take is one time in that situation for you to not have the right matchup that could be the one time that kills you.
Exactly right. Yeah. So it'll be a true chess match for Tarlando. And I guarantee you this, and I went and tracked it, they will throw the ball early and often versus Oklahoma State. They threw the ball on first down 69% of the time. They threw it 72% of the time on second down versus Baylor. They threw it 63% of the time on first down, and they threw it, I think, 56% of the time on second down. They will trust in Purdy. The reason Matt Campbell said he went for two in that game versus Oklahoma, he said, I was watching Purdy make unbelievable plays, and I wanted to keep the ball in his hands. Yeah. Mm. He trusts in Purdy. He's going to let Purdy win this game.
I didn't disagree with Matt Campbell. Some people took issue with him going for two.
They were rolling.
Look,
they were killing Oklahoma in that fourth quarter.
Here's my thing on two-point conversions. And this goes back to when I covered Baylor many years ago when Guy Morris was the head coach at Baylor. And they're playing A&M. It's an overtime game. And Baylor at that point hadn't beaten A&M since like 1985, 86, something like that. And Guy Morris's rationale, I asked him, okay, why'd you go for two? He said, look, our kids had fought their tails off to get in that game.
Amen.
We're not supposed to win. And at that point, when we got a little bit of momentum, and I love this quote, he's like, I just decided if we were gonna drop the hammer, we were gonna do it right then.
Yeah. I totally agree with that.
So I got a text with one of my buddies in situations like that. I'm like, drop the hammer. That's where you
got
to do it.
No, I totally agree. People got on Shano because Shano in that game versus the Seahawks, he could have played for a tie, which would have put him, it would have been better for his playoff standings and seeding.
And
Shano was like, man, I'm trying to go win the damn game. I gave it to Jimmy G. Jimmy G, go win the game. If we can't go win the game, then we're not going to win
the game. Yeah, we don't care about being undefeated
with a tie. Exactly. Like, I'm not that guy. He's like, yeah, so I respect that.
I watched that Iowa State, that whole fourth quarter. I sort of had it on the background, and then like I was like, my God, they put up 20 straight points that. And I mean, they're playing with so much confidence. And I can't believe Purdy fit that ball into that guy. It hit him right in the gut. It was just a great play by the DBs playing the ball and knocked it out into the other OU guy's hand.
Purdy is the best passer Texas will face behind Joe Burrow this year.
Yeah.
And I don't know who they're going to play in the bowl game. But he's probably going to be better as a passer than whoever we play in the bowl game.
Yeah, well, you're not playing Brock Purdy or Joe Burrow in the bowl game. So
that's what I'm saying. He's that good. He's that good.
Matt, you mentioned you watched the fourth quarter, and you look at Iowa State and Texas. Both of these teams are really good scoring teams in the fourth quarter. Iowa State, they both actually scored 116 points in the fourth quarter in nine games. Well, what is the difference, you might ask, in those points? Texas has given up.
I would say
128. Yeah. Iowa State's given up 43 in the fourth quarter.
You can score a lot. This is a thing that fantasy people will see. You can score a lot of points if you're always chasing and just trying to catch up or stay with somebody. It's a lot different in 20 points.
That's where Texas has been. A lot of those 116 points have been because they needed every damn one.
Iowa State is second in the country in fourth quarter point differential.
Yeah,
that's the difference right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They've been,
you don't want to fall behind and think you're going to come back in the fourth quarter.
The flip side of that, Rod, is Iowa State's been a terrible starting team.
They have been.
So, to me, here's the key for me in this game.
That's a good point.
This is what it boils down to for me. Because Matt Campbell and Tom Herman, very similar to what we'll talk about next week with Tom Herman and Matt Rhule. Matt Campbell and Tom Herman, very similar in what they value that wins football games.
Totally agree.
They both want to be balanced on offense. They both want to be able to run the football. They both value time of possession and being really good on third down and doing things from a conventional. But they're both spread guys and understand that in today's football, you've got to be dynamic and diverse and explosive. Whichever one of these two teams can get out to an early lead big enough to make the other team panic and turn it into a throw game, that's the side that's got the advantage.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing. Okay, so what if some team decides to be the aggressor and come out and throw early?
Yeah.
And that's my concern with the Texas defense because I think that Matt Campbell is smart enough to do what K-State did not, or at least continue to do what K-State started and didn't do throughout the game, was, no, it's Purdy's game. Let Purdy go win it early. You start playing a game where you want to run it against Texas, dude, you're playing right into it. And we've seen it. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma State, and we've seen it with K-State. Two good teams, by the way. They're not scrubs. Yeah. And by the way, two of the best running teams in the country with the best running back in the country.
And that's you a
wanna,
big part.
Exactly. So you want to play that game, that's fine. But I'm telling you, Todd Orlando's going to win. You want to beat Todd Orlando, we already know how to do it. Your quarterback's got to do it. Your running back's not going to be able to do it. Your quarterback's got to beat Orlando. That's what this defense is designed around.
And they got Purdy, and that's the type of thing that makes you scared. And also, if you look at Iowa State the last few weeks in some of these games against Big 12 opponents, offensive line has not fared well. Now, coming into the year, they're a team that as experienced and looks as good on paper that you can be from O-line, and they have a good O-line, but they haven't performed well late in the season. So I don't know where the confidence in that would be to run the ball for them. So it only lends more to putting the ball in the hands of Purdy to make plays.
Yeah,
Rod, we didn't get into it real quick before we start wrapping this up. You mentioned maybe going more four man or four down.
Yeah, on early downs. Because I think for Todd Orlando, basically when teams throw on early downs, they're making themselves more unpredictable. Todd Orlando, the thing that helps him psychologically as a DC and trying to anticipate what an offensive coordinator is going to do, you run on early downs, then, you know, second down's a 50-50, and then third down, you're passing. It is simple. Like, it is used to that process. You totally shatter that process in that MO when you throw on early downs, because then he's got to guess every down what you're doing, and he's not really good at that. That's why I say they're not playing the hand, they're playing the man. And I think Matt Campbell and they're going to do the same thing. But for Todd Orlando, you play four down or four-man front, it gives you a better buffer against the run early on just in case they're going to run it, but you can still drop guys back and deal with coverage, you know what I mean? And if they're gonna pass early on, hey, you still have a better pass rush with the four-man front.
I thought that's where you were going with it.
You know what I mean? Like, I think it just gives you a better buffer for the, let's say, the unpredictability of those early down. When you're three down early on, you know, you got to bring pressure. If you're gonna run blitz or apply pressure on an early down if they're passing, in that case, you just told me what you're doing. Then I can easily predict it. Oh, he's bringing pressure. I'm just gonna throw behind that blitz. But I think you can, in the chess match, you go four man front early on, four down front early on. Then you stop them on first down, whether it's a run or whether it's a pass, and then they're in second and long. That's a predictable passing down.
It sets you up
down.
Better for
third
those
and long
down. Yeah,
predictable
exactly.
passing down. You got to get to the point where it's a predictable passing down. The thing that makes it crazy, you throw on first down against Todd Orlando, then he's totally flummoxed.
And then sometimes also if we're talking four man personnel on the D line, like, it's normally going to be in the opposing personnel. Mm-hmm. So with the idea that, I mean, Iowa State likes those tight ends. If you're going to see more tight ends, you're going to be more inclined. And that's exactly what
totally
Herman
agree.
Said. It wasn't any blah, blah, political statement or whatever. It was just matching up against personnel. They do it in goal line. They do it to stop the run. I like your idea, though, that it sort of can automate your safeguard in those downs.
Exactly,
so then
right.
you can still play call. In addition to, it may just be forced because of the personnel that
Could
the
be.
Opposition
yeah.
and looking at who Texas will be playing. Well, you know, K-State, then Iowa State, and Baylor, they sort of trend all to being situations where you may just have to match up with a four-man line.
Yeah.
Joseph Osai, from that standpoint, Rod, could be huge in this game when you talk about just bringing him closer to the line of scrimmage, playing him in the box. And if you get a situation where he's lined up over Kolar, just have him smash the tight end every play.
Totally agree. Mash him. Yep.
As much as possible.
Yep.
Like,
don't let him get
no
a free release.
Yep.
No. Like, Charlie Kolar should walk off that field feeling like, damn, I was just in a car accident.
Totally agree.
If anything, get
don't ask the linebackers to cover him. Just ask
handsy.
Them to bang him.
See what you can get away with holding him off the
totally
line.
Agree.
Don't let him do anything. If they're giving you anything, take it for the first yard.
That's another thing. Like, Matt, you made a great point. We've seen all year defensive backs be handsy with these Texas wide receivers.
Yeah, with Colin.
Mm-hmm.
Rod, I don't know where you're at as far as this as a DB. I can live sometimes with a pass interference call or a defensive holding.
Well, in college, you almost should. Like, you aren't even penalized.
Yeah.
You're incentivized to commit the penalty if you're any way beat, because it takes off any risk of a touchdown on every play.
All right, guys, let's get to predictions. I'll start it off, I guess. Look, I think this game is pretty even. You look at Iowa State, four losses by a combined 11 points. This is a good football team. It's a quality football team.
Agreed.
And this goes back to my forest through the trees comment. I guess I'm just too close to Texas. For the second time all year, I picked LSU to win the LSU game. I'm going to pick Iowa State because I don't trust that Texas can play a clean enough game
on the road.
Situationally on the road to have it all add up to a win.
Yep.
The penalties at the top of my list of concerns.
Turnovers,
and then just kind of clunkiness in the red zone offensively. And then
Colin Johnson's hamstring.
That's a big part of it, too.
Big
but then, Rod, everybody's throwing the ball in Texas. And this Iowa State passing game, I'm telling you right now, if you haven't watched any tape on it, it's probably too late in the week now. Just take our word for it.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good throwing the football.
Yeah.
I'm going to take – I'll take Texas to cover. Matt, what are we at right now?
It's seven.
6.5?
Yeah, I've seen seven basically across the board right now at about 66. There's one book with like 65.5.
Definitely feel good about the cover, but I'm going to take Iowa State 34-31.
Man, Brock Purdy, he's legit, man. He's a real deal. You know what? I'll take Iowa State too. I'm leaning Iowa State right now. I just think Iowa State, they're a better football team. Their record shows. They're going to be at home. It's probably their biggest game of the year, arguably, at home.
Yep.
And Brock Purdy's the real deal. I'm worried about that Texas pass defense. I think they'll throw early often, and they'll throw it deep, and they'll make just enough plays against Texas to win 31-27.
If Iowa State loses, it's karma for wearing those awful blackout jerseys that they're going to wear on Saturday.
Awesome. Oh, they're wearing black jerseys?
Yeah, they're wearing all black.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
So black Texas head to fans toe. Have been wanting that for a long time. But I've been back and forth. I came into here picking Texas to lose, but after looking at the line of scrimmage numbers and the offensive line, I actually like the matchup Texas has on both lines of scrimmage, which seems really weird in this setup. But looking at Iowa State on the road, it seems like a sucker bet with the 7 points that's there. But there's just something about Texas getting the bodies back. And even though I think that it's been a multitude of factors, I really do think getting those top-end starters in a situation against a passing offense is going to be something that will help out Texas. And I think Texas might just get a little lucky with a few plays. But I think I'll take them to win 34-31.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right. We're all kind of in the same ballpark. We'll see how it unfolds on Saturday. Matt, thanks for everything, man.
You're more than welcome.
Rod B., appreciate the time and the knowledge.
Anytime, brother. Anytime.
For Matt, for Rod, for everybody at the Austin Radio Network and the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. Streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com, where you can get Rod B. on the Rodcast each and every weekday from 1 to 3.
Shameless plug.
Don't forget to find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcasts. Search Horns 24/7 Podcast. Don't forget to like us and leave us a review. And thanks to Matt, you can find all of our classic shows and interviews on the Longhorn Blitz SoundCloud page.
Yep, just type in Longhorn Blitz.
For the Horn family, for the Horns 24/7 family, I'm Jeff Howe. Thank you so much for downloading and listening, and we will catch you again.
You've been listening to Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com. Remember, for the latest Longhorn news 24/7, visit Horns247.com.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.